So, we know that talking to others is one of the most widely used strategies when coping with this type of injury. So, how can you build a proactive plan to talk with others? How can you put that system in place before you actually need it? So, are you going back to the work-life balance that you were speaking about a minute ago? Are you maintaining and nurturing those relationships, either with a trusted colleague or a friend or some people that we interviewed, their nightly walk around the neighborhood was what helped them. So how can you build a physical fitness routine into your life just so that when you find yourself in the middle of this storm, you're not starting from scratch on coping with it? So we really looked at how can we help people to proactively self-protect.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Dr. Chris Hodges. Chris is the superintendent at Bath Community Schools in Bath, Michigan. Chris, thanks for being here.
No, thanks for having me.
So, Chris, I know you've had some amazing things happen in your career and in your as you were working on your PhD. So give us the lowdown. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, so I'd like to share a little bit about my dissertation. I went through the EDD program at Michigan State University, which culminates in a group dissertation. So our group wanted to learn more about school administrators' experience with mental health. That's kind of where we started. And we refined that topic to learn more about moral injury specifically in school leaders. So the first question that you might ask is, what the heck is moral injury?
What is moral injury?
Not really talked about a whole lot. So there was one day as we were working on distilling out and figuring out what our topic was going to be, we were circling around this idea of administrator mental health. I was driving to work in the morning, and there was a story on the radio about moral injury. It was specific to healthcare workers during the COVID-19 pandemic, and that it was similar to burnout, but different. And basically it was because they were doing things and they had to do things that maybe they didn't necessarily agree with or didn't understand. So that really piqued my curiosity. And I shared a little bit about that with my team, and we dug into it a little bit more. So moral injury is a relatively new concept. It was first studied and given a name by researchers that were working with the Department of Veterans Affairs, either as a mental health worker or as a chaplain, sometimes in a shared role. And so what they were finding in the military context is there were servicemen and women coming home from deployments with symptoms a lot like PTSD. But to qualify for a PTSD diagnosis, you have to have experienced an extreme threat to life or safety. And they didn't have that experience.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they couldn't give them that diagnosis of PTSD. So what one of the early researchers, the way he coined it, is really, it's a violation of what's right in a high stakes situation by someone with legitimate authority. So you can imagine that in any field, someone might be able to experience something like that. So in that, service member context, it could be not passing out food to a group of children that need food. And you believe, you have a deeply held belief that we should be helping these people, but for whatever reason why you're not able to. Obviously, there could be more extreme examples than that in the military context. But what might that look like in schools, and how are school leaders navigating those experiences? So that was really the question at the heart of our work in our dissertation.
Wow. Yeah. And it is, when you think about it, it's like, wow, I think at some point or another, all of us in our careers have had an opportunity or an experience where it was like, and it's a powerless feeling when you know that morally what is happening is not something that you feel is right, and yet you feel like your hands are tied, right?
Right. And that the way you just described that is perfect. And some of our participants said very similar things about how they felt when they were going through an experience like that. So what we did, we interviewed about 12 participants So we solicited people who, do you think you've experienced moral injury? Here's a little bit what it is. Would you like to talk to us? So we sent that notification out to principals all across the state using our professional networks, our personal networks, to get people to share their stories so that we could learn more about, is this something that principals are experiencing? And if they are experiencing it, how are they handling it? How are they responding to those experiences? And what we found, obviously all the people we interviewed had experienced something like that, but the really shocking piece is the impact that it's having on people's willingness and ability to maintain their role or even stay in the profession altogether. So of those 12, so once we were coding, we used the code exit to mean they're considering either leaving their position, or they left their position, or they've left the field altogether. So we found that 10 out of those 12 had either left or were considering leaving their positions. And two of them had left educational leadership altogether. So that really speaks to the importance of this work, is that, it doesn't matter what level of the organization you're looking at. There's a shortage of educators.
Right.
There's a shortage of teachers. There's a shortage of administrators. There's a shortage of bus drivers. At every level of the system, there's a shortage right now. And if we want to think big picture about how can we help people stay in education, we need to start addressing the reasons why they are looking at leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. And as soon as you said that they were considering leaving, I was like, well, isn't that what's happening in education right now? You know, like there's not enough, and there's never been enough, but it just feels like, I mean, we're in crisis right now. Do you think that COVID, I'm sure you guys have, but what impact did COVID have on this for many educators? Because I'm sure precipitous or what, an impact? I don't know.
So we were wondering if that was going to come up or not. And, quite honestly, that was one of the reasons that I was interested in the topic is, I was a high school principal before, during, and after COVID. And now I'm a superintendent in a different district. But, certainly that was a challenging time for all of us. But really what we found, there were some stories about COVID that came up when we interviewed people. But by and large, that wasn't it. It was... feeling betrayed. There's three types of experiences that we found contributed to an experience of moral injury. And one was transgression self. So you do something yourself that's against your deeply held moral beliefs. Transgression others. So when you witness someone else doing something against your deeply held moral beliefs, or betrayal, which is a lot like transgression others, except you are the target of that action. So one of the examples of betrayal, one of the stories our participants told, they had loaned a teacher in their building some personal property, and it was in the teacher's classroom, and then school shut down during COVID. And the principal reached out and said, hey, the next time I'm in the building, I'm going to go and grab this. Are you okay with that? And then they did. And then that teacher took personal offense to it and, tried to get that principal in trouble, went around to their supervisor, and it really damaged the relationship.
Right.
And, that person felt very betrayed in that moment. An example of transgression others, there is a principal that we interviewed that was involved in some threat assessment protocols. And threat assessments, unfortunately, are a reality of the world in which we live right now.
Right.
And that principal really questioned what they saw was the negative impact that the threat assessment process that his district was using. They saw the negative impact that had on kids that were going through it. And yes, the kids needed help. Yes, the school needed to make sure that everyone was safe. But he questioned, was there a way that we could do this that was a little better, that was easier for everyone to handle while still making sure everyone was safe? And certainly in the aftermath of school tragedies, and unfortunately we've had another one recently, that's always going to be at the forefront. But we need to make sure that we're keeping people safe while also still, you know, respecting everyone's individual dignities.
We all feel it. Students are struggling more than ever with emotional and behavioral challenges. Lighthouse Therapy offers virtual, hybrid, and in-person behavioral and mental health support that builds around your school environment. Our licensed professionals are trauma-informed, experienced, and trained to work with K-12 students and staff. You don't get a cookie-cutter approach. You get a partner who listens, adapts, and builds trust. Because when students feel safe and seen, they thrive. Learn how you can get support at your school at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together. Right. And I'm wondering too, if COVID, because we were all in it together, do you think that's part of the reason why it wasn't like as, you know, like everybody experienced that at the same time, instead of it being something that was very specific to one person? I think that was part of it, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, like I said, COVID really didn't come up. We thought okay. that it thought that it might. And certainly there were some that were COVID adjacent. But, you know, another person that we interviewed was an elementary school principal talking about, you know, advocating for support for their building and, you know, for students with high needs. And, you know, what she found is, you know, she told this heart-wrenching story of, you know, this student not intentionally being violent, but ended up pushing a staff member so hard they hit their head on the concrete wall, and the staff member was physically sick afterwards, and the principal was shaking. And, you know, in that situation, reaching out to central office for support and not getting any. So it's things like that really came up that, you know, weren't really about COVID. And might there be a relationship? There might be, but that's not something we explored.
That's okay. I'll stop harping on it. I really
that's
will.
That's all right.
Okay. So what do you do when that happens? Like what is the outcome of you've identified a problem? So what are the next steps then?
So, and that's really what we wanted to learn more about, because we knew, you know, anecdotally from our own experiences and experiences of people that we know in the field, we know that these things are happening.
Right.
What we really wanted to learn is, how are people coping with this? So there's two types of coping strategies identified by Lazarus and Folkman called emotion-focused coping and problem-focused coping. So emotion-focused coping is when they're trying to change or improve their emotions as it relates to the problem, whereas problem-focused coping is you're directly tackling that problem to try to fix the problem. So, you know, some emotion-focused coping strategies in general might be, you know, being active, participating in a hobby, you know, doing stuff to help yourself unwind, whereas problem-focused coping, you're zeroing in on that problem. So the principle I just told you about, you know, she used both strategies in that instance. You know, she went home and just like took a minute. But then she also advocated for more resources to support the staff and students so that hopefully something like that wouldn't happen again. So, you know, some of the other examples that we found, one of the most powerful ones that we found, that one that was used most consistently by our participants, was talking with others. So you just that opportunity to sit down and talk with a trusted friend, a spouse, a colleague, a therapist. You know, here's a quote I'll give you from one of our participants. I feel like everybody in general should have a therapist that they can go to and talk to about things that are happening. So yeah, definitely my family, definitely my husband, my therapist was a big one. It was nice to be able to go into almost like a black box and just spill it all and then be able to walk out.
Yeah.
So that was, and I don't have the details of that one in front of you, but that was an experience specific to COVID. So the way that principal was able to process was by talking with her husband, talking with her other family members, and utilizing professional therapy.
Right. Yeah. And therapy doesn't have to be just for the kids or just for other people, you know. And I love the fact that therapy has been more normalized now in our society, and that there's no stigma. If you need a therapist, right? It's much more there's much more freedom to access it. And that's a great thing, really, because I know I've utilized therapy in the past as well, just to deal with whatever, you know, was happening at the time. It's important to have that to have the ability to feel like you can manage your mental health and manage it well.
Yeah. So the other, unfortunately, common emotion focused coping strategy that we found was exit. I talked about that a little bit. So this one administrator had been an administrator for over a decade, and he decided to leave the field. So you know, the quote that you know we have for him, I was beat down to where I didn't even like myself in the mirror every day because I was being asked to compromise myself, and it ate at me when I did it because there were times I did do it. And then at the end, I'm like, I'm just not doing it anymore. Wrong is wrong and right is right.
Wow.
And unfortunately, he felt so strongly about that. You know, not only did he leave the role, he left education altogether.
That's a tragedy. That's a tragedy. Yeah. And I'm wondering, too, when you talk about leaving, just changing positions, how many times do people change positions just because it's like, okay, maybe the grass will be greener? You know, grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, right? So if we can find a position that is, I see that with our company and with our therapists, you know, we, one of the things that, our mission is very clear that we are a therapy company run by therapists for therapists for the betterment of students. And it resonates with people, with therapists, because it's like, okay, so if you, and we live that mission. And when people feel like we haven't, boy, they feel betrayed by us. And I mean, those are the people, when I get those emails, I'm immediately, you know, emailing them and saying, let's have a conversation about what happened. I never want people to feel like we're betraying the mission because we work so hard to live that mission. And sometimes, you know, we'll hire people thinking we have a position and then the position disappears, right? And then it's like, what do you do? So we try very hard to be very black and white with people. Like, you know, it's like, we hired you for this position and that position now doesn't exist. It went away. We're doing everything we can to try to find you a position. But I run a business. I can't just pay people if I don't have a job for you, right? I wish I could. It would be so much easier, but that's not the reality of the world that I live in. But so many people, so I don't ever want people to feel like therapists, especially when they come to us, and schools as well. I mean, honesty is really important to me, but the therapists, when they come to us, I think some of them are coming to us from exactly what you're talking about, where they've had to compromise. They've had to have high caseloads of 100 kids or whatever, or you know, felt like they couldn't do a really good job because of the situation that they were in. And I know schools are there's a million reasons for all of it, and we're not getting into that, but they feel like they cannot do their jobs to the best of their ability. So rather than leaving, they come to us to try to have a little bit more. It all goes back to work-life balance. You know, that's a big one here. Work-life balance, having that balance between work and life. And when you do teletherapy, you have a little bit more say. But then, you know, they feel betrayed by that because sometimes it doesn't work out either. It's a tough situation all the way around sometimes.
So you just touched on one of the implications of this work is, you know, we believe as a research team that everyone needs to learn about this. Because there's huge implications for district leaders, whether that be the superintendent, the school board, the administrative team, that, you know, really making sure that we're leading in a way that aligns with the district mission and vision, and that leads in a way that takes care of our people. Because we are in a human focused industry. Yeah. We got to take care of our people at every level of the organization. So it's definitely something that needs more attention, but you know, it's not just leaders. And that was one of the things that surprised us. We were expecting to see a lot of these, thinking about the org chart, that you know the betrayals or the transgressions would be coming from above. And that was not true. That a lot of times it was lateral on the org chart, or even lower, the example I talked about earlier, it was, you know, the teacher who, you know, inflicted that moral injury upon the principal. We even had examples of parents. If I'm remembering right, it was a related to school admission or school discipline. And, you know, the pressure from parents that certain kids be treated certain ways, either because of who their parents are, what their address was, the color of their skin. That was hard for that principal to navigate, and understandably so. They felt very strongly that their role was to treat every kid on equal footing and let the facts of the situation lead you to the decision. And like I said, that injury could even come from outside of the organization.
So what is the next step for leaders then, or for what do you recommend for people to do now that they've heard about this and they're more aware? What's the next steps?
So what we are advocating, whenever we're speaking to a group of teachers or leaders about this topic, what we advocate and what we build time for in our presentations is let's, do some self-protection. So, we know that talking to others is one of the most widely used strategies when coping with this type of injury. So how can you build a proactive plan to talk with others? How can you put that system in place before you actually need it? So are you going back to the work-life balance that you were speaking about a minute ago? Are you, maintaining and nurturing those relationships either with a trusted colleague or a friend or some people that we interviewed, their nightly walk around the neighborhood was what helped them. So how can you build a physical fitness routine, into your life just so that when you find yourself in the middle of this storm, you're not starting from scratch on coping with it. So we really looked at how can we help people to proactively self-protect.
Makes sense. Do you think too, now that you said that, do you think too that there are people that are more predisposed to because they don't already have those systems in place? Like if you don't have, I've always been a strong person. I've always had a strong personality. I'm very type A. I'm very, and other members of my family aren't. And I've ne it's always like when you have a strong personality like I do, and it's almost like when people respond to something, it's like, wow, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect because I don't think that way. So do you think that there are some of that as well? Like just some people are just able to because they've experienced or maybe because they've had therapy before or whatever that they one of the things I learned in therapy was boundaries. I learned a lot about, I have very solid boundaries for myself because I needed that in my life at that time. And it's just something that I've kind of carried over through my adult life. But I just wonder if that makes a difference for people or not. What are your thoughts about that?
So what you're really speaking to is the idea of resilience.
There you go.
And one of our participants did talk a lot about how their own, childhood and adult life and up through their time as a principal, they were resilient all the way through. And it wasn't necessarily because they were going for a walk around the neighborhood or they had a friend they could talk to. It was because, of that inner resilience. And our research didn't really dig deep enough into where that comes from, but I would think those resiliency strategies are probably very important.
Okay. So, Chris, where do people go to like learn more about your research and what you've done? And I know you guys have presented. Do you have places that you're presenting again in the future?
We don't have anything on the radar right now. We presented last December at the Michigan Elementary and Middle School Principals Association
Oh, neat.
conference. We're always looking at presenting more. I will be presenting to a group of aspiring leaders in Clinton County later this school year. I think it's in April. But as far as open events, we don't have anything. But I do know that any of us would be more than happy to talk with anybody about it, should anyone want to learn more.
So, how do they find you?
They can email me at chodges@bathschools.net, and I would be happy to respond and share the contact information of the rest of my team.
And they can probably also find you on your website. I would assume your school website would have a link to you as well.
Absolutely. So bathschools.net is our website. You can get to me there. There's nothing related to this topic there, but certainly they'd be able to contact me.
Awesome. Awesome. Chris, it has been a pleasure. This is it's a very important topic. We have so many great educators and we don't want them leaving the field. It's bad enough as it is where we're at. We want people to stay and it's just, it's the future. Our kids need us. They need you. They need me. They need everybody that's listening to this podcast that's in education. And if you've experienced this, get some help because we don't want to lose you. We really don't want to lose you. We need you in education. It's a critical time right now. So thank you for shedding a light on this for us. And thank you so much for your time and the amazing work that you've done.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.